Far and wide across Beaufort County, the boy who would one day become heavyweight champion was celebrated for his uncommon strength. Groups of teenagers would stop by the commercial farm where he worked just to watch him load crates of vegetables into the rear of trucks. Chubby, yet endowed with broad shoulders and iron biceps, he prided himself on his physical prowess, which he used to protect less able boys from school bullies. At a Fraser summer reunion years later, his aging cousins remembered how he would show off by scooping up two of them under each arm and three more on his back. As they laughed and laughed, he would set his jaw and wobble this way and that for 10 yards or so before setting them down in a squirming 300-pound pile. Whether this particular piece of lore has been colored by exaggeration is unclear, yet there can be no arguing that by adolescence, the seed of who Joe Frazier would become had been planted. Joe Frazier answered to the name Billy Boy in those days. It was inadvertently given him by his doting father, Reuben Frazier, a one-armed handyman come bootlegger whose speech impediment prevented him from uttering the words baby boy. In the years that would follow, he would be identified by a variety of other appellations. The Slaughterhouse Kid, Billy Joe, later, more famously, Smokin' Joe. Or, if he was in the company of friends, Smoke. But it was always Billy that would anchor him to the hypnotic South Carolina lowcountry of his youth. Even at the height of his boxing career, whenever a voice would call out, "Hey, Billy!" from the rear of the crowd, he'd immediately send someone in search of the voice. "That's somebody from back home," he'd say. "Go get him." No one who knew him from the Laurel Bay section of Burton, South Carolina, ever called him Joe, and surely no one who represented themselves as kin and actually were. They called him Billy Boy or Billy. Laurel Bay sat in the poorest county in the poorest state in America when Joseph Frazier was born on January 12, 1944. In a clearing cut from 10 acres of woodland, dense with big pines and gnarled oaks dripping with Spanish moss, Reuben Frazier erected a single-story house that had a sporadically leaky roof and no electricity or running water until some years later. Elevated from the ground on oak blocks, thus keeping it dry in the event of occasional flooding from nearby creeks and swamps, the bare structure had a living room, a kitchen, and two bedrooms, one occupied by Reuben and his wife Dolly, Billy and Billy's sisters, Martha, Maisie, Julia, Flossie, and Rebecca, Beck, and the other variously by his brothers Marion, Bubba, Eugene, Skeet, Andrew, Bozo, Reuben Jr., Jake, John, Big Boy, and Thomas, Tommy. David, a seventh brother, would die in infancy of diphtheria. With the exception of an old car that Reuben always seemed to be under the hood of, the place appeared to have been preserved in amber from the bygone days of Reconstruction. Reuben buried what small sum of cash and few valuables he had in a coffee can under the pig pen out back. There he also stashed his reserves of corn liquor, guarded by a hog that only Reuben seemed to have the skills to pacify. "That animal would take you out," Joe's niece Lisa Coakley told me. "No one would ever get near it but Uncle Billy. It stunk back there." Generations of Fraziers had labored in the blazing heat on this very same land. First as slaves on the antebellum plantations strewn across the sea islands, and later as field workers for truck farms that became the hub of the local economy. Slavery had been established at the outset of the founding of South Carolina by prosperous white planters from the West Indian colony of Barbados. The Barbadians had amassed their wealth through the harvesting and processing of sugar cane, which they sold at a premium as molasses, refined white sugar, and rum. Liberal with the whip and other forms of torture, the Barbadians were particularly cruel to their slaves. Because Barbados was relatively small and lacking in economic potential, the planters set sail for the Virgin Coast of South Carolina, where the chief cash crops were rice, indigo, and later, cotton. Accordingly, They enslaved specific West African nationalities who were able to endure the extreme climate of the Deep South.